Sarah, Jen, anybody else, it's Alan.
It's Thursday, isn't it? April 14th, 2022. Is that the day? All right. It's 7 o'clock, too.
Getting a video call from my daughter that she's at work. Or while I'm at work. At a frat party. Like last week.
Nice.
I'm like, I'm working. And she's like, I know, but it's Thursday, so I'm calling you.
Nice. Hey, it's Rucksack Radio. Thanks for joining us here. The podcast for Patriots, hosted by two veterans with one mission and 1776 reasons. Yes. It's almost Friday. And we'll live again tomorrow night with Jenny joining us for the Fun Friday show. We'll have a few things for that show. It should be entertaining. Got some good stuff tonight, too, I think, too. I won't get too serious tonight. I want to give an update on a few things that are happening on the other side of the world. We can have some whatever discussion comes our way and what you guys have in the chat to bring up. And I've got a few stories. It'll be fun for us to talk about. But the big story out there, obviously, is Elon and his quest to try to the hostile takeover of Twitter. And man, oh man,
I mean,
the lefty meltdown on Twitter is phenomenal. The way people are losing, everybody's leaving the platform. They're the same ones that threatened to move to Canada, you know, and never did when Trump was elected. Now they're all going to leave Twitter. And it's great because a lot of the comments, there's so many comments that are simply, well, fine, go build your own platform then. You know, just yeah. Like they just like they told, you know, the right to do. You know, I could go build your own platform. So
then that can get shut down like Parler did.
Yeah.
It's only a hostile takeover for Twitter. It's not hostile for Elon. Yeah. Elon's just like, fuck it.
Well,
I'll do it.
The thing is all he's trying to do is give everybody the right to speak. I mean, that is what our republic is all about. That is what the functional democracy, that is how it works. But they just don't get it. And then there's people out there, you know, that are trying to take jabs at, you know, Musk, like, oh, he wants free speech, but he blocked me. Well, yeah, that doesn't, can you still speak? Yes, you can.
Yeah, he probably
he's
said
got
something
a right not
rude to him. That's why, you know.
Well, it doesn't even matter. You have a right not to listen to somebody, just like you have a right to speak. I hate when people do that with blocking. Well, you blocked me. You're not for free speech. Are you still speaking, dummy? Yeah, you are.
Just
don't have to listen
me,
to your bullshit.
Because I don't want to listen to you tell me to go get blown by a fucking chimpanzee or some dumb shit.
Yeah,
like
I know.
Fuck
it's
off.
Like, yeah, it's stupid. But man, it's so funny to watch a meltdown on there. It's like the end of the world. Why? Because they might actually have to hear ideas they disagree with, and they might have to try to articulate why they disagree with them, other than go put a banana in your butt or something stupid. You know, it's.
Did you fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
You have to fall for the banana tailpipe. Hey, fall for no banana in the tailpipe. Yeah. Yeah, that was a good movie. It was a classic.
That was classic. Murder.
See, if you talk to me about good classic comedies or action films from like the 80s into the early 90s, I could probably follow along with some of that. I just didn't watch much after that, but. Yeah, anyway, so that's the big thing. I'm not going to spend, I mean, there was some really great tweets out there, but they've been all over the news today. So everybody's already seen them and heard them, but it's, if you've got a Twitter, I'm telling you, just all you got to really do is go to Musk's account and you can read on his tweet
to
where he put his offer. Oh my God. You could do it on that rabbit hole. You'll be there all day, all night. It is so fun to just watch him meltdown. Even if he doesn't end up buying this, if something comes, you know, if it just doesn't work out, and it may not,
he should just to ultimately troll them.
They might try to stop him in different ways. They've got a couple ways they can try to stop him. We'll see what happens, but I hope he does too. And man, it's just, even if it's this moment in time that he's fucking with them, is great. Imagine having that kind of money where you can just map $14 billion to go troll a bunch of people.
Just gonna go buy half of social media.
just to go watch a few million people fucking wet their pants, you know? It's great. Good for him. On the other side of the world, you know what? I'm going to start someplace else for a second. Let me just get my map up here and we'll go. Because there have been developments. Of course, we're in the Holy Week and the weekend coming up here. There's a lot of activity going on. And within the last couple of hours up here or outside of Damascus, there was an Israeli airstrike on up in Syria there. And the reports that I saw from a Saudi channel was that Israel struck in the northern town of Rishala near Damascus. And the strike was aimed at a cargo of Iranian UAVs, drones, basically, anti-aircraft systems and radar systems. Iran had put out a bunch of stuff in the last couple of days. Basically, the Islamic Jihad movement said that the Israeli government and its army continue to escalate things. They said they call on our people everywhere to declare a general mobilization and engage the enemy. Iran said that they will harshly confront Israel wherever it feels necessary. They also said they will support all those who fight against the Zionist government and speed up its destruction. It's getting heated up. So that's happened up there. Here, Israel has sent more reinforcements to this area in the West Bank. They're talking about sealing off the West Bank in Gaza for the next, week at least, 10 days. There's a lot going on there, so it's something to pay attention to. I'm going to move this map so in case there's questions that come up, I could see all of that at the same time. So it's busy. It's getting more active, and the airstrike by Israel inside Syria, right outside of Damascus, right on Assad's back door, basically is like saying, fuck you. We're not going to put up with your threats. So we'll see. Again, things aren't, they're escalating. They're not de-escalating. So I also want to, before I go to Ukraine, let me pull this one up. So these little blue circles with the dashes in them, those just represent all the places where NATO countries or European countries in general, because Finland's not in NATO yet, but I believe they will be soon, they've all these places where these dashes are, they've sealed off their borders to any vehicles that are registered in Russia or Belarus. So any vehicles, whether they're passenger vehicles or semis or flatbeds or whatever they may be, they are not allowed. They've sealed off those borders. The European Union has. So a lot of activity in Belarus with the movement of Russian troops that are still deployed in that region, that are shifting around and staying in that region, just moving locations. There have been, Ukraine has shot missiles down, fired from another Russian jet north of the border, the Belarus, inside Belarus towards Ukraine. So they haven't, they're keeping the threat very much in the northern part there. They're keeping it very well known that they still pose a threat there. And the activity has really increased today up in this area around Kharkiv too, and even up towards Sumy and back north towards Chernihiv again. So again, I still believe that they're going to come up a lot higher here than what all the experts on the media are saying. They're certainly going to hit this lower. They want to get into this Donbas area, but I think they're going to really make a push from the north here too. I think they want to try to split that country into thirds in a way and just deal with that eastern third of it. So they've got a buffer zone too. We'll see. But something's going to happen relatively soon, I think, with that, the next phase of that. We saw that Ukraine sunk a Russian flagship in the Black Sea, which was awesome to see. So this is your rundown in here. There's not, I haven't seen anything in the last day or so that jumps out at me necessarily that we haven't seen or heard in the last you know, 5-6 weeks. But what I do think is as the mainstream starts shifting to other news and Ukraine's not constantly news all the time, Putin's gonna, I think he wants the attention too. So he's got to do something. I don't know. I don't know when that is, but they're gearing up there. They're positioning. There's a lot of resources down there. And they're still fighting in Mariupol. They still haven't ceded that city yet. As a matter of fact, let me zoom down in there, and we can probably take a look and see what it looks like. So they have taken more territory here than they had last time, the last update. But the area that's not shaded in red yet, Ukrainian forces still largely control. And that includes this big steel plant up here.
They should just start shelling the shit out of the red area. Just, it's their own country. So, I mean, if their own countrymen are out of there, just start lobbing fucking shit in there.
Yeah. Things they don't know. And they don't know how many of their own troops have been cut off, right, and might be fighting in areas and don't have communications. So they still have to, I get what you're making sense. It's not like Russia has people in all of this red area.
No, but they do have some sort of intelligence. They got to have some kind of intelligence.
And just, oh, they do.
Just start fucking lobbing shit in there. You're not attacking Russia at that point. You're still defending your own country. It's just your own country.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. They're doing that. I'm seeing all kinds of reports of shelling by Ukrainians in different areas here. It's just the Ukrainian forces don't have control of this. The Russian force is still by their size, and the number of people they have deployed in that area have occupied that area. So, but they haven't taken Mariupol yet. I think they got a fight there that they didn't expect to get. And they're eating up a lot of resources. The Ukrainians could still supply from sea if they weren't having a blockade by the Russian Navy. But that's something different that happened today, because after they sunk that Russian ship, several others attached to that fleet moved a few miles further offshore. So they made a point, and they moved further offshore. They can't. Listen, the Russia only had, I heard today, that was a cruiser that was only one of only three cruisers that Russia has in their entire Navy. So that's a big loss for them.
Costly.
It's $750 million. I thought it was more than that, but that's the figure I saw today from a military expert. It was talking about, you know, the Ukrainians have destroyed basically or knocked out 5,000 pieces of Russian equipment between tanks and airplanes and helicopters and whatever. And now this ship, but this ship at $750 million is by far the most expensive piece of equipment. And it had 500 sailors who we haven't heard that any were casualties. I find that hard to believe. But for now, Russia's saying they evacuated all 500 of them. And yeah, we'll find out more later. But it's a big deal. It's a big win for the Ukrainians that they did that. It's a big morale boost. And what that does is it shows that if, you know, Russia was trying to move in and they wanted to do an amphibious landing down here in Odessa, because ultimately they do want to get this Odessa area too. They've now realized that it's not going to be that easy, which means that Ukraine, if they are able to maintain that deterrence from their shoreline, they can free up some of their mechanized infantry that are in the Odessa region to help in some of the other areas. So it's really a very big strategic and operational win for the Ukrainians to have knocked that ship out, and a ship that was really a prominent part of Russia's Navy. So pretty amazing. Pretty amazing stuff. And it goes. So that's your rundown of Sarah. You're probably, she's in the chat, says, and the news was 70% destroyed. You're probably thinking of Mariupol, which is at least 70% destroyed. Odessa has not been, it's only taken a couple of hits, and those hits were early on in the war, and one maybe, I think, a week ago, some fuel tanks, storage tanks were hit in that area. But other than that, Odessa's been like, Putin loves Odessa. I mean, I think that he, at one point in time, I think he had a mansion there, a vacation home, something in that area. And he doesn't, he's got a love affair with that city. So I don't think he wants to see that city reduced to rubble. But they, in order to accomplish what they do, it's a very important city from a strategic standpoint. And it was just demonstrated by the Ukrainians that that's going to be very difficult for the Russians to do. And it's I don't know if this map will let me zoom in far enough. Well, maybe it will. Yeah. But it's a very difficult, there's not a good place for the Russian Navy to land. Geologically, geographically, there's not a good place. And the Ukrainians have had 6 weeks to further fortify their defenses of that beachhead there. So, I mean, Russia, if Russia tried to launch an assault, an amphibious assault on Odessa, there they would lose thousands of troops, similar to the way the United States did in World War II. On each island, we lost hundreds or thousands of Marines in amphibious assaults to take these islands back. And that would be no different here. If the Russian Navy chose to do an amphibious assault in this area and tried to make a shore landing with Russian Marines, they would lose thousands of them. And I think that they realize at this point in time, they can't afford that because they've already announced to their public that they've taken significant losses. So this is really, there's really a shift in the overall momentum. Russia's still a very big threat, and they've got a lot of military might. But Ukraine has probably taken out of commission 20 to 30% of the force that was put in for this operation. And the force that was put in for this operation was probably about 20 to 30% of Russia's overall military. So it's they've taken out a sizable portion of not only personnel, but their equipment. All of the planes they've knocked out of the sky and attack helicopters. And here's the thing. Russia's not going to have an easy time replacing these things because they can't manufacture them right now because they can't get a lot of raw materials and parts because everything's shut down going in and out of Russia. So it's going to put them in a big predicament. The more they lose and they can't replenish, at some point in time, Putin's Security Council, whatever he calls it, is going to have to tell them, hey, we're getting ready to cross the Rubicon here. Well, we can't defend the homeland from other threats because we've lost too many resources and we're spread too thin now. And now our own country is at, is vulnerable from attack from any number of bordering countries that wouldn't mind doing so, probably, including China, especially China. So there's my take on what's happening right now. I mean, we're still going to see a lot of bloodshed, and Russia is still going to push back and fight in these areas quite a bit. And there's still going to be, I think there's still going to be a big push up here, up north. We'll wait and see. So I'm keeping an eye on this. Again, equally keeping an eye on the Israeli area, because at each show, there's something new that's a pretty significant escalation. It feels like, at least that feels like to me, that I'm communicating that. So, Arnold, Phil, what do you think? What do you got to add?
Well, I was wondering how Putin didn't see or plan for this. Yeah, stock up on your raw materials just because you're going to incur losses. So it's interesting that he didn't spend the last 4 years or whatever when he had the deal with Trump just buying the shit out of stuff, you know, raw materials for shipbuilding. And you can't build a ship in 4 years. I understand that. But you, to reinforce your own raw materials, you should have spent quite a while. You knew you were going to do this. He knew he was going to do this. It's not like he woke up one day and goes, I'm going to go to Ukraine.
I think a lot more countries are going to start considering that kind of thing. But I think here, the reason I think that he didn't is because I think he bought into his own dogma. I honestly think that he thought that his military was as big and bold and bad as, you know, as he wanted it to be. But it hasn't.
Or you're under.
And not only that, we can't. You know what? We can't take a lot. We got the Ukrainians a lot of credit too, because it's not just, yes, the Russian military has failed in very fundamental, basic ways that a military should not fail for an operation like this. But Ukraine has also fought back really hard. I mean, this again. If the Afghanis had been the Ukrainians when we went into Afghanistan in 2002, 2003, we would have been done by 2005 and everybody would have been home. By the time we cleaned and mopped everything up and, you know, got security and got out of there. That's the difference, I think. But so, I don't know if that helps answer your question, but I think he bought into his own hype. I think he bought into his own propaganda, his own narrative, and he overestimated his own military, and he underestimated not only Ukraine's military, but he underestimated the world response.
That's where I was going to go next, because the world response wasn't the same, I don't recall, as it was with Georgia, as it was here. With this. I mean, he went through Georgia in like 3 days. It was like 72 hours through Georgia. And then, you know, the world told him, hey, you got to go back. And he did.
Yep.
But like the whole world is behind Ukraine. It's just like, what the fuck are you doing, man? The only thing stopping everybody else from being involved is your red button.
And in so many ways, it's not just, you know, the world being behind them from a standpoint of giving them arms, but humanitarian aid. A diplomatic voice, and in the private sector, companies pulling out of there, private hackers trying to take down their computer systems, you know, just freelance people looking at Google Maps and giving intelligence to the Ukrainians about, you know, battlefield conditions and things like that. I mean, it's a different world of warfare now, and that's I hope this is something that right now in our war colleges and in our military academies that instructors are taking note and using this as a very good practical case study as it happens as to what kind of other, you know, dynamics and variables can come into play now.
Right.
It's a different world. And
they're still posting videos from their phones. He clearly didn't take out communications like he should have. I mean, that's 101 shit right there.
Well, he did take down a lot of stuff, but if you remember, then Elon Musk sent in and put the Starlink service all over Ukraine. So that gave them service again. And he hasn't been able to break, Russia hasn't been able to break that encryption and take Starlink down yet. So that's
fucking Elon. Fucking Elon's gonna take over the world.
Take me to your leader. It's just, he's that pasty white guy over there. He's really cool.
Just sitting on Rogan's podcast, getting high, coming up with ideas. Yeah, they go by Twitter.
It's amazing though. It's so cool. You know, he really. I heard, you know, newscasts they talk. He kind of made a comparison to him, a funny comparison. You know, to Tony Stark and Iron Man, you know, like this guy, he's just this genius that wants to do good things for the world and meets the forces of evil and has all this money, you know, and it's not, you know, it's a fair analogy.
Yeah, all he needs to do is crack that arc reactor thing. That's over your head. I'm sure you don't know what I'm talking about.
No. No, I don't. So is there any questions in the chat or anything regarding the that area of the world before we move on to some random stuff? Any thoughts that you want me to convey here live regarding that? It's a very dynamic area of the world, obviously. It's changing every day, but we'll see what happens, especially down in the area of Israel and the Palestinians, because there's no talk from either side about talking. It's just this force meets force escalation that's going on there. And so that's only headed and can only head for more problems. The connection between the Ukraine and Middle East is the connection between all of it is really the use of forces. I'm trying to find a way to explain this that it doesn't it's a holy war in a way. But that doesn't, I get that doesn't gel exactly right, but the way that alliances are already formed. Syria hates Israel, and Russia is strongly allied with Assad and always has been. So, and because of that, Russia's obviously already got a proxy relationship with Iran. Iran's close with Syria and hates Israel. So, and Putin is pulling troops from Syria. He's pulling Syrians and any other number of Muslim militants that want to fight in Ukraine against the Ukrainians. So it's all, that web is all connected. It's really hard to explain because it is so complicated. The dynamics, it's so tribal on the ground there when you get into the different sects of Islam and how it is. They don't rule like our style of rule. It's very different, and local governance is a lot different than it is around, in the United States. And it's pretty interesting. I think as soon as Putin started talking about pulling out of the northern part of Ukraine, Kadyrov, whatever, is the idiot Chechen was pissed at Putin. He was calling him out, and it was the wrong move. It was weak, and they don't. They're just radical. They want to fight. They want blood. They get a chance to kill somebody for what they're told is going to take them to their palace, then they will. But I do think where it is going to come into play, as I mentioned, maybe a week or so ago, is that the fact that Putin has put in a lot of units that are from, in Russian republics that are large Muslim population, and they're taking an inordinate amount of the casualties, that at some point in time is going to irritate them. And that could cause some strife, and that could cause some of them to flip around and fight the other way, because that's what they do. It's like what happened to the U.S. and Vietnam with villagers being on, friendly to U.S. troops during the day and then putting the pajamas on at night. My dad had a story about that, or has a story about that. I'll just share here because I'm thinking of it now, and it's a good point. So my dad, they were working near a village they were working in the area of a village for a while, and he was on a fire base. He was an artillery guy. And he used to go into the village every morning and get a shave from one of the villagers. They were all friendly with the, you know, the U.S., with the Marines. And one night, their fire base got ambushed in an area. And, you know, a bunch of them had gotten through the wire and stuff. My dad recognized one of them that ended up getting away and didn't get killed as the guy that was the barber and the shaver that was shaving these guys. So my dad's like, this guy had a straight blade to my throat so many times and could have slipped. He didn't. And they, a few of them went the next morning early and took care of him before he didn't shave anybody ever again. Put it that way. But that's how it was. A lot of those villagers would, you know, they'd be friendly with U.S. troops and then turn around and put the pajamas on and fight. They were gaining intelligence. But, I mean, you got to think, if you put yourself in their position, it's their homeland. And they might not have anything against, they might not have had anything against what the North Vietnamese philosophy was. And, oh, that's sketchy. Brian asked a good question. Am I correct in assuming that Putin will never accept a conventional loss in the war? I believe that as well. I don't think that he can. I don't think that he would. I'd be very surprised. I don't know what that means in terms of escalation, though. I can't find it within me to quite yet get in a fear factory of this is going to go nuclear. I could see him launching more conventional assaults in more areas, and he would get his ass kicked. I just don't know.
I don't see him going nuclear. His behavior as far as it goes has been irresponsible so far, but I don't think he'd be that irresponsible.
He could go chemical. He could do
chemical, yes.
Chemical nuclear attacks.
Yeah. I'd be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got, you know, those tactical nukes, they call them, and stuff that are smaller. It's really hard to say. He's deployed more weaponry up near Finland, and he's deploying more nuclear resources in the Baltic Sea, which has been denuclearized, but since he's saying that once, you know, Sweden and Finland, their rhetoric to join NATO is, and I get from his perspective that is a threat to them, but NATO isn't about, you know, it's not an organization that's developing a coalition to attack and take over another country. It's a defensive coalition. And we can argue all day whether or not the politics of it or anything else are fair or right or just, but it's not. I don't know. I just don't. I have such a hard time. Sorry, I'm coming down with something. I got this little scratchy, itchy going on.
That's the season. Spring.
The allergies are stupid. But it's going to be interesting to see how. But interesting is really an understatement. I'm sorry. I use that too much. But Iran and China, yeah. This could escalate in so many ways. Iran's already going to get pulled in through Syria. This is already filling out, if you will. Iran's run across. We're on the brink of something big in the Middle East between Israel and the certain Arab states and certain Arab forces that play in that we haven't seen since the Yom Kippur war in the 70s, I think. It's inevitable at this point. Because this is and part of that is because we have Biden. And there's no fear of
the U.S.
having the stomach to stop it or doing anything. Listen, they're not even talking about it. It's not in the news. It's not in any White House press briefings. It's not in any Pentagon press briefings. Israel led an airstrike today on an area outside of Damascus. I mean, There's nothing in the news about it. Just, it blows my mind. But, so, when it all blows up, it's gonna be, everybody's going to be so surprised. And it'd be like, it's fucking been right here in front of your face. It's right there. You can watch it. You can watch it all happening in real time. Well, let's move on to other things. Mike Bites. So, Mike Tyson has been told like that he cannot. Yep. He's told that he cannot sell ear-shaped cannabis gummies in Colorado.
Oh, I thought it was beef jerky.
No. His new edibles are shaped like ears. And of course, in reference to the time in the 1997 fight with Holyfield when he bit his ear. Tyson's cannabis company. Boy, say that one three times fast. Tyson's Cannabis Company, I guess again. Tyson 2.0 can't sell their ear-shaped edibles in Colorado because state law prohibits marijuana edibles from being shaped like humans, animals, fruit, or other images that could attract children. Why would a children want to eat an ear?
I don't know. We had those wax lips as kids,
I can't even
remember?
Talk. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Wax lips, candy, cigarettes. We had all that shit.
He still plans to sell the edibles, but will modify their shape from a bitten ear to a letter T.
You got pierced.
Right.
Why don't you just make them into E's and H's, you fucking... I can't say anything about Tyson.
Well, why don't you just rip the outer lobe part off all the way around and just turn into gummy, call it a fucking pigeon and a worm. I don't know. It's
ear parts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's somewhat disrespectful. Though.
Listen to this, though. This goes in where you have a little bit of money, you can make a lot of money. So he's been in the pot business since 2016 and reportedly earns more than $653,000 a month from it.
I believe it. Him and Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart.
Snoop's like the master dealer.
No, Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart went in and bought a shit ton of land in Northern California to make their own pot business, from what I understand. Like, they went in together. Like, that's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah, it is.
It's a new growing, it's a huge business.
So we got Karen over there.
I Massachusetts. Hated this when they would do this.
Well, you're gonna like this one too. Massachusetts woman wins trip to New Hampshire on The Price is Right. A Massachusetts contestant on The Price is Right was hoping to win a getaway to some tropical locale during a recent appearance on the game show. Instead, she won a trip to neighboring New Hampshire.
Okay, where in New Hampshire?
Catherine Graham had already won a fire pit and a love seat when she was picked to go on stage and play side by side with host Drew Carey. Then she found out she'd be playing for a trip to New Hampshire, just across the border from Massachusetts.
Great, that's what we need.
She won by correctly guessing the value of the prize. Graham confessed she was hoping for somewhere a little bit more exotic than the live free or die state, which she said she'd already visited millions of times.
Yeah.
Said, I just wish it was Tahiti or someplace or Bora Bora. Doesn't say where, Phil.
That's what we need.
She just won a trip to New Hampshire.
More
mass. That's the first time I've heard.
Jesus Christ. They drive like Chicago. Like, the whole state drives like they do in Chicago down there. Just a bunch of fucking assholes.
You know, the only Price is Right memory I have is being a kid and being bug-eyed when a woman ran down and her tube top came down. Fun bags fell out. And that became like a Price is Right blooper forever. When I was a kid, I used to like, can we watch the blooper show again?
Oh, Jenny, they're all the same. Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut, Jersey, they all drive the same bunch of fucking douchebags.
Yeah, I've never. I mean, why a trip to New Hampshire? I mean, I'm okay. I am. What's in New Hampshire that somebody would want to win a trip there?
You're looking at him.
Come on now.
Actually, Jumanji was filmed in New Hampshire. I believe portions of The Shining was filmed in New Hampshire. The movie What About Bob was filmed in New Hampshire.
Yeah, but is there a What About Bob house that I'm going to go visit?
It was filmed on Lake Winnipesaukee, which is the largest inland lake in New
Hampshire. Well, then what do we do the rest of the day, the rest of the trip?
Lake Winnipesaukee is about the size of, not about the size. It's comparable to, what the fuck is that lake up by Appleton?
Oh, Winnebago?
Yeah, it's big. It's big up there.
Okay.
Really, really pretty.
Well, sell me your state, Phil. Dude, be the state's marketer. Beautiful. Sell me to beautiful New Hampshire. be the travel agent.
I'm here.
What's the Appalachian runs through there, doesn't it?
White Mountains. So they have
the Appalachian Trail?
No, it's the White. Well, they have the White Mountains up here. The Appalachian Trail, I believe, is Vermont and down into New York and all that. But they have, like, the, up until recently, within the last 10 years, the Old Man of the Mountain was a natural rock formation where if you looked at it from the side, it looked like a man's face, like Abraham Lincoln. And they got a bunch of natural rock formations like that up here. It's pretty cool. If you ride a motorcycle, it's really, really good motorcycle riding up here. There's a lot of twists and turns, all two-lane roads. There's no, no, Brian, you would not be safe in the White Mountains.
I was going to say, just put on like a big fur coat, and they'd probably think you're a Yeti or something. Like, no, don't shoot that. It's the Bigfoot.
No, it's really pretty up here. I realized that tonight. I went out tonight to get my taxes done, right? The one tax place closes at 3 p.m. the day before tax day.
Well, you waited until 3 p.m. the day before tax day, to be fair. So
essentially, I was driving around town. I was like, you know what? It really is kind of pretty over here. I hope I don't ever get sick of it. But from Massachusetts, the last thing you want, like, I would be pissed off if I want a trip to Massachusetts. Like, what the fuck? I can go there whenever I want.
Right. What if you, yeah, exactly.
Before Snapchat filters as a kid.
World's most boring person identified. So bad it's not even worth reading about. Scientists have discovered what they believe to be the most boring person in the world. If you live in a small town, you're an accountant who likes watching TV, we're afraid you're at risk of being a snooze-inspiring bore. Religion, bird watching, and smoking are now seen as the dullest hobbies, while working in data analysis, cleaning, and banking are also signs you might not be very interested. All right. Dr. Winyard Van Tilburg.
Jesus.
Who led the study said boring people are generally disliked and avoided by others. The irony is studying boredom is actually very interesting and has many real life impacts. This paper shows how persuasive perceptions of boredom are and what an impact this can have on people. It talks about all the psychology of boredom but it's got the most boring jobs. And the five most boring jobs and the five most exciting jobs. Which one do you want to start? What do you think are the most boring jobs?
Let's see. I can't think of them. It's so boring. My mind is too interesting.
Well, you mentioned one already.
Did I?
Yeah.
What was it?
Tax. Insurance.
The tax collectors.
Tax and insurance is one. Data analysis, accounting, cleaning, and banking. Those are the five most boring jobs, according to this study that was done.
I can imagine.
What do you think are the five most exciting?
Firefighting, police work, military, porn stars, and candy store salesmen.
Nice. I love that last one especially. You know what? I think I've done all of those except the firefighter. But I did once put out a fire with a fire extinguisher. So technically, I think I've done them all.
I put one out with a fire hose, if you know what I mean.
I was never a porn star. Only in my own mind. I did date one for a short time. We talked about that already, though.
Hey, if you take care of business while you're at work, technically you're getting paid to do it. So it's the same thing as being a
neither,
porn star.
None of those five are on the list.
God damn it.
Believe it or not. The five most exciting jobs from number five, teaching. Number four, teaching, exciting job.
Get the fuck out of here.
Well, yeah, they sat at home and tanned all day. What did it just turned on the Zoom every now and then.
Started OnlyFans.
Yeah, that's why it was so exciting. Four, healthcare professional. I guess there's an adrenaline rush there. That could be exciting.
ER. Sure.
Three, journalism.
What? Fuck out of here.
Number two, jobs in science.
Yeah.
Go.
I could be interested in that.
Yeah, I would definitely say that that's up there. There you go, Sarah. That one, the number, most exciting job, performing arts.
Strong disagree.
Yeah, I don't.
I would take watching paint dry over performing arts.
Well, you know what? Technically, porn star is performing art. It really is.
All right. But even that can get boring. I mean, you got to broaden your search every now and again, right?
Performing arts are cinema, right? Okay. Cinema is performing arts.
At some point in time, midgets and pancake batter have to be involved.
If movies are performing arts, then porn is movies. I call it performing arts. So porn star number one. Good job, Phil.
See, that was on the list.
Just the wrong list. Oh, wait, no, that was the right list. Baffled woman realizes her rescue. Oh, I get this guy off the screen. I don't have a picture of him. But baffled woman realizes her rescue dog only understands Spanish, but she can't speak it. How do you get a rescue dog and not know this beforehand? Like, how do you go? Like, you go to the place. How do you not own when you go to the place? And like the dog comes up to jump on you, and the owner's like, "Abajo, chico, buena chico,
ándale."
I didn't figure out then that the dog does, and he responds to Spanish.
How do you not get the rescue dog's backstory? Like, I know all of Skipper's backstory before. Well, it was only 5 months old. He was only 5 months old when I got him, but I know his backstory. So I don't understand how you get a rescue dog and they're not like, "Oh, this guy's from Mexico." Oh, okay. Well, maybe I should learn Spanish or not get a Mexican dog.
The woman couldn't understand why her adopted dog wouldn't complete basic commands such as sit and stay. But then she tried speaking to him in another language.
German.
Adopting.
Tried every other language on the planet except for Spanish.
She originally thought the dog had never undergone basic training, saying whenever I say basic commands such as sit and stay, he would just look back at her as if she was speaking gibberish. Well, she was to the dog. Said he's a rescue from Houston that has been relocated from Minnesota. Okay. I figured out he only understands Spanish this morning after looking up how to say come here on Google Translate. He was down the hall from the... The dog just brings her the phone and it's got the Translate app up. You know, here you go, Karen.
I gotta pull up Google Translate to talk to my dog.
I said Veneke in regular speaking voice and boom, he was at my feet. I was elated. But now I need to learn slang Spanish for outside, go potty, sit and stay. Oh, you got to learn four or five Spanish words?
Oh, no.
This dog's like bilingual and
understands human language. How many languages do you understand?
And you got to, learn five Spanish words.
Yeah, who's the dummy?
Right? This dog's way smarter than him. He's probably just sitting there the whole time like this stupid bitch.
Or however you say it in Spanish.
Punto. I don't know what it is. I don't know Spanish. I used to understand more than I could speak. As I worked in hotels for 10 years. So, you know, 30%, 40% of your staff is Hispanic in many cases. And so I said, try to jam with the housekeeping staff, some of the maintenance guys a lot to try to pick up on it. It got to a point where everyday conversations, I could understand it more than I couldn't. But I couldn't speak it. And at this point in time in my life, in my brain where I'm at, I don't think I could learn another language.
Really? I'm actually interested in learning like a few. I mean, I want to get that Rosetta Stone and learn a few.
You let me know if you get it, you let me know how it is, because I would love to learn another language. I love to learn anything.
Right.
I mean, just give me anything to learn. I just, knowledge is, again, it's an aphrodisiac.
It really
for
is.
Me. So, what time we got here? We got more time. Good, because I got more stories.
We have not done a show on our. We talked about it a little bit, our tattoos, but that's about it.
We can do that if you want after this story. We can talk a little bit about those. Dad left mortified. His son pranks him with a moaning suitcase at the airport. Can you?
Can I imagine? I would do it.
Cudge Cullingman, 64.
At a London Shore, England.
This is out of Benidorm. Was left frantically rooting through his luggage to stop the X-rated noises blasting out, much to the amusement of passersby at the airport.
Oh, you set a hilarious timer for it and just put it on full blast in the suitcase.
In a hilarious video, the panicked 64-year-old can be seen rummaging through his belongings, desperately trying to find the Bluetooth speaker his son Lewis had sneakily packed.
Playing gay porn at full blast.
Oh, we're two guys fucking.
Oh, what you dick in my mouth? Here, let me jerk you off.
I think the moaning is better.
We have no idea. Neither one of us know anything about gay porn. We're just going on whatever.
I don't know. I was gonna. That's why I changed that subject real quick. While waiting in the queue to check in the bags, Naughty Lewis hit play on an explicit video file on his phone, connecting the speakers. Suddenly, the sound of moaning boomed out from Cudge's case, with 30 people standing nearby, unable to contain their laughter. And explicit, so it was...
It was porn. Of some sort.
Oh man, that is great.
It was probably like grandpa porn or some shit like that.
Everyone in the airport looked around and was in fits of laughter. Then it stopped and played again, and he was more panicky. And he gave it to me, and I didn't know how to turn it off. I'm there thinking, Jesus, there's families all around us. It was getting too much in the end. Oh, man. That's good stuff.
Hilarious. And it was a Bluetooth, so he had to be within, like, a certain amount of feet.
Yes. Oh, boy. We have... We got a couple more stories that we can get into tattoos. We got time at 7:54. Let me keep going here on the stories so we can. Oh no! You know what? I got to see if I have this up. I don't. Dang it! Dang it! Dang it! I got to come back to this guy. We'll have that one on tomorrow's show, because. I did close that window out. We'll get, here we go. So, ex-soldier exposed her penis and used wheelie bin as a sex toy in public.
Checks with Dex.
First of all, woman.
That's a bearded lady.
Trans sex offender lifted her skirt and exposed herself three times in one day. Chloe Thompson, 42, was caught rubbing herself on a public wheelie bin. I had to look up wheelie bin. That wasn't. It turned out to be what I thought it was, but you know, like a trash receptacle thing. I just had never heard it called that. But it's not. You know, this is over in England.
She's got man.
She was caught rubbing herself on a public wheelie bin before using a sex toy on herself in an alley.
Flashlight or dildo?
A couple. It's both.
She was the cream in the Oreo cookie.
Why? So I didn't want to think about that. A couple shouted at her and she ran away. On the same day, she exposed herself on the streets where she lives and thrust her hips into a fence.
Careful, that's how you get your dick caught, young lady.
Once she was inside her house, she exposed her bum and thrust her against the window, which three children saw as they were driving. So she puts her ass up at the window, and all of a sudden you're driving by and you go, look at that woman's ass. Then his dick drops. Like, whoa.
You know, for a chick, she's got quite a dick. She's a shower, not a grower.
Thompson was already on the sex offenders register before she had come out as trans when she was legally named Andrew McNabb. She has 17 convictions for 22 offenses, including sexually assaulting an underage girl in 2011. Why was she even out on the street?
Yeah. And how is she still breathing? Where's that girl's
car? And she opened a TikTok account, which she didn't inform police, so she was arrested for that. Thompson used to be a soldier. It's okay.
Well, it's today's military.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, sadly, you're not wrong. At least that's the viewpoint of it, right?
I've met a few trans people and seen a few online since this whole trans thing came about. I've not seen one that I thought, oh, that's actually attractive.
I do have this. Huh. So this is a Florida man calls police to check whether his meth is authentic. This is real, from the Hernando County Sheriff's Office.
I just bought this from my dealer, but I don't trust him.
On 3/10/2022, at approximately 7 p.m., Hernando County Sheriff's deputies were dispatched to 1463 Mariner Boulevard in Spring Hill after a resident in the home called 911 to request that a deputy be dispatched to test the methamphetamine he had recently purchased.
It's not blue like in Breaking Bad.
Upon arrival, deputies met with Thomas Eugene Colucci. Colucci. Thomas Colucci.
He's Italian.
Two C's and an I. It's a G. Colucci told deputies he had recently purchased methamphetamine from a male he met in a local bar. And after having used a bit of it, believed it was actually bath salts. Colucci went on to tell deputies. He went on to tell
deputies. I draw the line in math. I'm not doing bath salts, for Christ's sakes.
Right? He went on to tell deputies he was an experienced drug user.
That's how you can tell the difference between meth and bath salts.
See, check out my bar.
You want to see on my coke?
It's evidently the substance he purchased didn't provide the expected sensation. Clucci told deputies he wanted his methamphetamine tested as he did not want other people to purchase fake meth from the individual.
Yeah, who sold it to got him. It from that guy. So he's a snitch too. He's a fucking rat.
Wanted the deputies to put the person in trouble for selling dangerous drugs. However, he was unable to provide a name or any contact information for the individual.
Well, meth, the innocent drug, not the dangerous one.
Yes. As requested, a deputy performed a field test on a sample of the white crystal-like substance from each of the baggies. The substance from both baggies tested positive for meth. So, anybody made that call?
So it was meth, just weak meth.
Yeah. Deputies placed Colucci under arrest and in the back of a patrol vehicle.
Could you imagine taking that call as a cop?
Oh, dude.
A suspect we've had to come over and test his drugs.
We had, I remember one time when I was doing it, we had, showed up, a woman had a duplex and she rented out, she rented off the rent out the lower and she lived in the upper. And she called because they were making a bunch of noise down there. Now she owns it, she's the landlord, whatever, but at the same time, if they're disturbing, you know, we got to go respond, right? We got to look. We knock on the door, and as soon as we walk in the little stairway to go up, it just reeks of pot, and there's smoke. You can see it. And she answers the door, and the shit's right on the table behind me. I think the incense is burning. She just looks over the door. I'm like, you know, the incense isn't really working.
Plus, we can see it right there.
Like, all right, we'll go tell him to quiet down, and you might want to clean up around here. I didn't see that pipe.
We're going to tell them to quiet down, but we also need to take you down for a little trip downtown.
But people do. People do this. It's like a real stupid thing. He was charged with possession of meth, possession of drug paraphernalia, 2 counts. His bond was set at $7,000. This was from their post. It goes on and it finishes. If you, someone you know, or someone you know, have doubts about the authenticity of any illegal narcotics you have on hand or have obtained from another person, the Hernando County Sheriff's Office is pleased to provide this service free of charge.
I bet they are.
Hey, we're at the end of our hour here tonight. Thank you for joining us. Sorry for the little allergy bits going on here. I hope you'll tune in with us tomorrow night. Jenny won't be with us for the Fun Friday show. Got good stuff coming up for that show too tomorrow. And we'll have another update out of the Middle East. So, again, I hope you have all have a wonderful rest of your evening. Have a great Friday. We'll see you then. Friends, there's no substitute for educated, passionate patriots. Value our sacred principles of liberty. Take action, preserve them. We're honored to share your company. Rock on. Have a good night. Peace. Oh.